All right, guys, cook with me for a second. Remember when fast food workers in America were fighting for a living wage? The reply from corporations was that if they paid fast food workers at the time $10 an hour, that would make the price of the food more expensive and they would have to like lay off workers because they couldn't afford the benefits. Inflation would take over. It was a whole rigmarole. The United States collectively agreed and called those workers ungrateful. Like, that was the knock against those fast food workers. They was out there protesting. They was having fast food strikes. And America in large slandered all those workers. Like, they told them, man, see, guys are ungrateful. Your job isn't that important. And those workers were saying, hey, man, I'm working 40 hours a week. I need a living wage. And one of the tales that the corporations was lying about this was during the pandemic, wages went up to like $15 an hour because there was a scarcity of workers. So that showed that these corporations was lying. They could have always paid these folks $15 an hour, but due to the scarcity of workers, now all of a sudden they could find a way to give bonuses for fast food workers. I saw some signs like, yo, hey, we'll give you a $500 bonus and a cell phone if you come work at McDonald's. But people was like, oh man, I don't want the price of the McDouble to go up to $2. You're asking for too much money. You're asking for $10 when to be above the poverty line at the time was like $12, if I'm not mistaken, to be over the poverty line. These folks was just fighting for $10 an hour because the national minimum wage at the time was like $7, like $7.50, something like that. And they were just fighting for $10. But to be over the poverty line was $12 an hour. Now, the thing was, we collectively snubbed our nose at those fast food workers. The sentiment was like, yo, if you guys wanted to live in ways, you should have worked harder. You're flipping burgers because you didn't work harder or you didn't try hard in school. So it was kind of like a de facto punishment. Like, if you guys wanted better money, you should have worked harder. You should have went to college, got a degree, which, see, yeah, that's working out for all of us people with degrees. We got like $100,000 in debt and now we're baristas because old folks not moving out the way. But that's a separate argument. That's a separate argument. But when the fast food workers ask for more money, collectively, we all was like, yo, dude, it's your fault you're working in fast food. I remember people saying, well, that's a high schooler job. How dare they want $10 an hour or $12 an hour? You're saying it's a high schooler job, but you got adults working it. And these adults are working 40 hours, which was kind of a mute argument. I'm like, it can't just be a high schooler job if you got adults there. But the sentiment was, because these adults are working at a fast food restaurant, they're somehow lazy, didn't try hard when they was young, and they need to be punished. And if they want a living wage, they need to go back and retrain and go to school because they're not worthy of a living wage because they're working in fast food. So when automated machines came into fast food and into the fast food industry, it was positioned as a reaction to the overreach of the demands of the fast food workers, right? And the unions. It's like, yo, the unions back these fast food workers and say, yo, they should have a higher wage, a living wage. And the general public was like, nah, see, that's your problem. Y'all ask for too much money, so these automated machines are coming and taking your jobs. When in actuality, that wasn't because they asked for a living wage. That was just capitalism, right? It was just more cost-efficient to have an automated machine take orders than it was to have a person there. I mean, we see this all throughout history, man. Like, that was the thing about the cotton gin. The cotton gin made it so you didn't need like 50 people out there separating the cotton from the seed. It made it like pointless to have slaves doing that type of work when you had an automated machine that could do it quicker and more reliable, right? Like, the Industrial Revolution and the use of gas and energy has really made it so capitalism can flourish. And that was kind of like the argument of the Northern states during the Civil War. Like, leading up to the Civil War, the Northern states was on these tractors and the use of gasoline-powered machines to do the work of 100 people. So they're like, yo, why are y'all still having slaves in the South, dude? Like, why would you still do that? Because the Southern state argument was that, yo, we need these human hands to manufacture this cotton. But then the North was like, yo, bro, you can just get a tractor and a cotton gin to do the work of 100 people. Why are you still having slaves? And then the argument morphed was like, oh, no, this is just what we do. This is part of our history. And bam, then you got the Civil War, right? Because like the argument for slavery more like, yo, you don't really need slavery when you got these machines that can do the work of all the people. you're just keeping the slaves now because you just want to dominate people, which could also be said about, you know, these anti-abortion bills. We're just trying to control women, but I digress. Keeping on theme right here. But from a corporation standpoint, any job that can be automated will be automated. That's a job that I don't need a worker. I don't have to pay them benefits. And I can increase shareholder benefits. I can increase the payout to shareholder, shareholder value, right? That is capitalism. The world and Americans in particular are told this lie, that our self-worth is connected to our jobs. The more prestigious a job, the more respect you get. The higher the salary, the greater person you are. Like, outside of networking, I try myself not to ask somebody what they do. I try to keep that out of the equation because you only tend to ask somebody what they do so you can determine how much respect to give them. So, oh, you're a lawyer? You're a doctor? Ooh, wow. Oh, you're a janitor? Huh. Okay, I guess you didn't try hard, right? It tends to be that thing because we connect our worth to our jobs. I bring that all up to say this. It's about over for capitalism as we know it, man. As I see it, there's only like 50 years left of capitalism as we know it. And that's because this AI is getting way, 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 way too advanced right now. It's not all the way there. It's not like talking to a human. It's not to like, it doesn't have the subtle nuances, but this AI is advanced as hell. And let me tell you, man, a lot of our jobs are going to become obsolete. When you start including automation with artificial intelligence, an intelligence is actually like teaching itself and critiquing itself, a lot of jobs are going to be pointless, dude, because capitalism is always trying to get the cheapest amount of labor to maximize the profits. That's one of the tenets of capitalism. So what happens when white-collar jobs become obsolete? Think about it, man. Like, why would I need a paralegal now when I got AI that can research all the stuff I need? Like, can do the work of maybe 5 paralegals in this one AI. Maybe 50 paralegals, depending on the AI and what it's set up to do. Why would I hire a paralegal? I take it a step further. What happens when I don't need a lawyer? Like, a lot of law people just do research and know loopholes. Like, what if the AI can do that for me? It's not too far-fetched to see a situation where AI can be a lot more reliable in doing surgery than a human. Like, think about it. You have an automated machine with AI that can actually scan your body and know what ventricle to cut and where not to do. I can see a scenario where that happens. And what you gonna do when that happens? Like, not like major surgeries, but some of these minor surgeries, which, look, there ain't no such thing as a minor surgery. The only minor surgery is a surgery I don't have that doesn't affect me. But I can see a scenario where, like, minor diagnosis and surgeries and definitely distributing drugs becomes fully automated. So what happens when you don't need the pharmacy techs or the pharmacist no more? And for those of y'all don't know, man, I'm a very tech-savvy guy. I follow tech news. And I'm up on everything that comes out dealing with AI because two things that are really pertinent to me on the Common Knowledge Podcast, staying up on technology news and the dissemination of your DNA, like where your DNA going and the cross-section between like our DNA and technology and how people are weaponizing our DNA. That is very, very pertinent to me. So I've been getting on some of these AI platforms. Let me tell you guys, it's kind of scary. I went to ChatGPT and I asked it to write a rap for me. It wrote a rap. Now, the rap didn't have the human feel to it, but one thing I did find out that in China, they have fully automated songs. Like, AI is actually writing a song, making the beat, and using voice-generated algorithms to sing the song. What happens when that is all we want? And to be honest, I can see that taking off because right now with auto-tune, man, most of the songs sound computerized. What happens when that happens? Like, yo, even like bespoke clothing, right? There's something about having a tailored outfit to fit you that is miraculous and it feels good. So you go to a tailor, they go to take your measurements and they take your suit in, they make all the measurements and having a like, seriously, if you never had a suit made for you personally, do it. It's a life-changing experience. I've had that happen, and I'm glad I did it. I paid a lot for that tailored suit. But what happens when you have AI that can automate a sewing machine? The only thing it needs is my measurements, or I can just scan my body and it knows how to make a tailor-made suit for me. And then the cost of that bespoke clothing goes down significantly. What happens then? What are the tailors going to do, man? It was okay when automation was affecting blue-collar jobs. But what happens when it started hitting these white-collar jobs? There are a lot of jobs that this AI and automation are just going to take away off the table, dude. Which leads me to Andrew Yang. When Andrew Yang ran for president, he brought up universal basic income as a feasible option to deal with AI. And we all laughed at him. Like, the younger generation was like, yeah, that makes sense, Andrew Yang. But all us old fogies, the elder millennials, the X and the boomers, we was like, nah, that's stupid. That's never going to happen. And let me tell you guys, the future is now. We're going to have to really talk about our next step and what capitalism is going to look like, or even if capitalism is even a viable way of running our governments. Really, what is our currency going to be? Like, what's going to be the system? Are we going to still go by GDP and fiat? When a lot of these jobs are obsolete and people can't work because AI does it better, AI automation just does it better. China is already dealing with like social currency, social credits. Like, you do something right, they give you social credit. And I was thinking to myself, like, how dangerous would it be if that became the currency of the world? Because morality is a sliding scale, depending on who you ask, man. What's more to you may not be more to some, right? That goes back to the slavery thing. At one point in time in American history, that was morally right and good and just. And all those slave owners were going to church, praising the Lord when they come home and rape their slaves, right? But that was seen as morally okay. So that'd be damning if social currency became currency. Like, there's only a few jobs I don't see being in danger in the next 50 years. Of course, the politicians' jobs are not going to be in danger because they're in control. And maybe like logistics and truck driving. Like, I don't see fully autonomous vehicles being a thing in the next 50 years because, right, it's too many subtle nuances that goes with driving. Plus, I don't know who you're going to blame when there's a wreck. I guess you can blame the company. That could be a thing, right? So, and plus I can see that being legislated. Like, nobody wants to see truck drivers lose their thing. I don't see that being a thing. But what happens when all the trains are automated, when you don't need engineers to run the trains? Who among you think that Jeff Bezos wouldn't have a fully automated fulfillment center when he didn't need workers and all the products can go out lickety-split? I mean, that'd be the move, right? If you can take away all the humans in the fulfillment center, because right now the most dangerous place to work in America is an Amazon fulfillment center. And y'all, think about this. One out of every 153 Americans work at Amazon. If Amazon start automating jobs, man, a lot of American workers are screwed. What's going to be the move? What are we going to do? Check it out, man, because they keep on rushing those people. Rush, 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 rush. And it's only so much a human can do. Rushing, right? The only jobs going to be left now are basically fixing these machines and tweaking the AI. And that takes a very particular skill set to do. So what are we going to do as a society when this AI starts to take over? Universal basic income is probably going to have to be the move, man. It's probably going to be the only viable way to keep society afloat in the next 50 years. If AI keeps on going on the trajectory it is. Right? I was playing around with AI yesterday, and I asked the AI to write me a whole website code, and it did it. I put in the particulars of what I wanted in my website, and it wrote me a code. And I was like, damn, bro, there go my designing job, because AI just designed me a whole website in 2 minutes. In 2 minutes. Right now, you see apps like Lissa already doing graphic design and taking pictures of people, compiling images and giving you whatever you want, dog. It's over, man. It's over for all of us. We're damn near 3 steps from Skynet. Dead serious. But what is going to be our next step? I don't have the answers, but I think that's something we need to talk about. Because I don't see capitalism as it is lasting 50 more years. Because technology ain't getting worse. And good luck trying to put them biscuits back in the can. Just something to think about. Let me tell you guys a story. I have been getting slack personally for some comments I've made on the Common Knowledge podcast during the Kyrie Irving fiasco and during the Kanye West debacle. I have gotten messages saying that I am not pro-black. I'm not sticking up for the black man. And I was kind of Uncle Tommy and dancing soft shoe for the white man because I did not back any one of those guys initially. And I still don't back any one of those guys to this day. I stand by what I said on that podcast, but people came at me from the position like, yo, Marcus, why are you shooting at a black man like that and not trying to see his side of the story? Which I said many a times, what you mean and what you say are two different things. Now, the Kanye West thing, I'm going to stand firm on that. Dude was just shooting the hell off and nobody should have ever been supporting that guy. R. Kelly, nobody ever should have been supporting that guy. But with Kyrie Irving, it is a little tricky because, like, it seemed like a man was trying to do something for his community, but just did it the wrong way. And it was riddled and wrapped up in a bunch of anti-Semitic BS that we can't let slide. And that's still my position. It's like, yo, I can understand your intent, but how you delivered it, terrible, my guy. Could not do it. And I'm the same way when it comes to, like, homophobia, Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, racism, all that. My position is the same. I'm not like switching up on that. Right? Now, this leads me to a post I made on the socials, which I didn't think was controversial. And let me just read the post so y'all will know exactly what I said. And here it is. Let me just make this clear. If you supported Kyrie or Kanye and not supporting Megan Thee Stallion, that is, you don't care about the black community, protecting black women, or pro-black. Just shut the hell up and go work on yourself. A lot of folks are moms on this. Now, here's the thing. I thought this was going to be like the, yeah, he's right, rah, rah, let's go black community. Mm-mm. That's not what happened. And you know what? I forgot to calculate in this whole post thing. It's that men just don't believe women, though. That's just the case. Like, men do not believe anything women say. Women are always the bad guy. No matter what the situation is, it's always a woman's fault. And before y'all be like, Mary, you shouldn't have been a super feminist guy. Now, let me just break it down to you, though. Like, we got, like, years of history and years of programming to deprogram ourselves from this. Like, think about Tupac. Tupac told us, hey, man, these hoes be lying in his song. And he had the rape charge. He was like, oh, no, they was lying. Remember Mike Tyson? The whole situation with Mike Tyson. We thought Mike Tyson was innocent. And the woman was lying. Why? Because she went up to his hotel room at 2 a.m. And people's rationale was only one reason to go up to a man's room at 2 a.m. Yeah, but she doesn't want to have sex. That doesn't mean that Mike should be able to take it because she went to his room at 2 a.m. Like, come on, dog. And I think it's good to point out that women are capable of lying, right? There are situations where women lie on men for financial gain. But in this case, I didn't see the need for financial gain. Megan Thee Stallion already had a budding career, had her own money. So I don't see, like, the principles of why she would lie. But that doesn't matter. Women in general are just liars. They all are liars. We can't trust them. This is the type of stuff we're dealing with in the deprogramming. I forgot to think about that when I made this post. Because folks was just literally shooting at me like, no, Megan is lying. And look, I actually read this story and been checking up on it. Now, I'm not going to say I have all the facts because the trial is going on right now. But I have been following this story. So let me just break it down to you guys. So this is what happened according to all the stuff I've been able to piece together. So there was a party at Kylie Jenner's house in Hollywood. Now, Tory Lanez, Megan Thee Stallion, and Megan Thee Stallion's friends were riding in this SUV. An argument broke out. At this point, it got contentious. Tory Lanez pulled over the SUV, tells Megan to get out. She gets out. Now, at this point, Tory Lanez or somebody, let's just say that somebody allegedly pulls out a gun and shoots at Megan's feet, thus causing Megan Thee Stallion injury and having to go to the hospital. Now, here's the thing. When Megan Thee Stallion initially went to the hospital, she said she stepped on glass, right? And the reason why she said that is because she was trying to protect Tory Lanez, because this was during the height of the George Floyd and Black Lives Matter incident, and she didn't want to see another black man get shot by the police. So essentially protecting a black man, right? Now, keep in mind, while this is going on, Tory Lanez is actually on probation. So I don't know whether he's supposed to have a gun or not, but in this whole argument, this whole situation, a couple things that are not being disputed, right? A couple things that are not being disputed is it was Tory Lanez driving the SUV. It was his SUV. It was also Tory Lanez's gun that got shot, right? There is no debate that a gun was shot because the police found 4 casings at the place. So we know a gun was shot. We know it's Tory Lanez's gun. We know Megan was riding with Tory Lanez, her and her best friend. We know that. That is not up for debate. Those are the hard facts. And if you're asking me personally, that is enough to put the blame on Tory Lanez. Deadass. Like, honestly, before we go any further, the fact that it's your car and your gun that got shot, I gotta think you're culpable. You're culpable. How much to blame, that can be debated, but no, you're to blame. It's your gun, my guy. A gun was shot, it was your gun. Your fault. But a lot of folks shot at me when I made this post. And I'm just going to read a few of the comments. I'm not going to get no names because I don't want anybody getting cyberbullied because you listen to the Common Knowledge Podcast. But let me give you some of the comments that I got to that original post I made. And here we go. Let me find it. All right, there we go. One, both Kanye and Megan's behavior are detrimental to black society, in my opinion. We look to celebrities as activists, and in reality, they have done nothing tangible to help black society. Now, all right, if you want to make an argument that we idolize celebrities and we shouldn't be doing that, cool, but detrimental? Like, my whole reply to this is like, what the hell did Megan do that was detrimental? She is the victim here. She got shot. Like, what's detrimental about that? Like, yo, you come back from a party, you get shot, you doing something detrimental, right? And the reply was her music, the way she makes money. The way she makes money, her dancing, the song WAP came up as a counterpoint. And to me, this is a problem, man, right? Whenever black women, well, women or black women in particular, market off their bodies, it's an issue. They looked at it as being less than or degrading. However, people are out here buying it, right? It's that argument about porno. Like, everybody thinks porn is disgusting, but ain't nobody watching it, but it's a billion-dollar industry. Like, who out here watching all this porn if we all out here hating it, right? And that's the thing with Megan Thee Stallion, right, and her content for music. Also, if you think she's detrimental to the black society, and she's maybe harming the kids. Kids not supposed to be listening to her music, right? And you have a choice not to listen to that music. But if somebody do chooses to listen to her music, that doesn't mean that she's being detrimental, right? What about the news? What about systemic racism? Like, it's a lot of stuff that I think is more detrimental to the black society than just the music. Also, hip hop is a billion-dollar industry, right? This is my argument I said in the previous podcast. Like, hip hop is a billion-dollar industry. Entertainment is a trillion-dollar industry, and ain't nobody telling Quentin Tarantino to calm down on the violence. But for some reason, black folks have to calm down on the violence because blackness is connected to criminality, and people think that we just tend to do everything we hear. But the white supremacist going to the grocery store and start killing black people, it's because he's mentally ill. But like black folks, it's because we're detrimental to society because we rapping, right? And a lot of people reply to that, like, what are you talking about, dog? That makes no damn sense, right? But that was one argument. Then that more from the same guy making an argument about like single black women. This was actually the comment. This was the comment. Because I said it was a double standard, right? That he's applying to men in hip hop versus women. And it is like men in hip hop can talk about hoes and degrading women, and we'll listen to that. But when a woman empowers herself and accepts her sexuality and put it out there, we call her a hoe and we start denigrating her. So it's true. There's a double standard in hip hop. But his reply to that was, where's the double standard? I said black society, meaning a black woman and black man. I did not co-sign dysfunctional behavior no matter the gender. I can't co-sign dysfunctional behavior no matter the gender. In my opinion, if a woman wants protection, she should get married. You can't say you independent and don't need a man and then want protection at the same time. That's hustling backwards. And my reply to that is like, look, we should be protecting black women, period. Like that's the issue. If we're all pro-black and about black empowerment, we got to protect all our black women. That's something the Jewish community does. That's something the white community does. That's something the Arabic community does. But when it comes to us, unless you don't pass this purity test, you're not worthy of being protected. So once again, you can't say you're pro-black, just pro-black man, if you're not out here protecting the women. However, that was a funny comment to me, like dysfunctionality. I'm like, huh? But Megan got shot. Shouldn't we be protecting her? Which led to another comment I got. And my homie said straight up, we don't believe her. We don't believe her. I'm like, well, I was like, what don't you believe? Like, it's an honest question. And my homie said, it was a ricochet wound, not like she was directly shot. So you saying that already admits she got shot. Whether she got shot by a ricochet bullet or shot directly, that's still being shot, dog. Like, it's easy for us to say, well, you didn't really got shot. You got a ricochet bullet fragment. Like, bruh. That's still being shot. I don't want to get hit with a hot lead ricochet fragment. So she got shot. So I can't condone the actions from whoever who shot her, which I'm leaning towards Tory Lanez. Right? Then my other homie said, it is very much disputed. The best friend was found to have gunshot residue on her person as well. And let me tell you something, guys. I looked this up. Gunshot residue tests aren't conclusive. They're not. Just look it up yourself. Like, don't believe me. Go look it up. Like, it's a lot of flaws in gun residue testing. A gun can shoot and debris can go everywhere. If somebody's in close proximity, you can get some of that on you. I'm just saying. Putting that out there. But I continue. The police failed to test the gun for her prints because this was initially a shot, fire, and possession case. Meg said that Tori stood over the SUV and shot her, but didn't see her best friend that she was fighting with, by the way. And there is an alleged witness that says that there was a woman with a gun. Now, here's the thing. That could be the case. However, when you look at Megan Thee Stallion's text records, it shows Tory Lanez apologizing for shooting. Right? Now, it could have been the friends with a gun. However, my next question is, how did the friend get the gun? It's Tory Lanez's gun. Keep that in mind. This is Tory Lanez's gun. So how did the friends get the gun? How did the friends know what the gun was? Right? So Megan Thee Stallion's best friend, who she was beefing with, went to wherever the gun was at and shot it at Meg because she was beefing with him, according to Tory Lanez, because he was having sex with both of them. I still think it's Tory Lanez's fault, even you going by that story. Like, dude, how did she get your gun? Like, seriously. Like, yo, I don't know how that absolves you from being responsible. Maybe you shouldn't get 22 years, but you should get something if that's the case. However, there's also a story going along that Tory Lanez offered Megan and her best friend $1 million apiece not to report this. Not gonna lie. If I'm Tory Lanez, yeah, I give you $1 million shut up about this, especially knowing I'm on probation and I already got some other charges pending on me. Right? Yeah, because he, by the way, he still got a charge pending about August Azalea when he assaulted him. So if I'm Tory Lanez, I got all these court battles. Then yeah, I give you $1 million, which leads to my next point. This is the guy y'all defending? Like, okay, maybe Megan is lying. Maybe she is. I gotta say that. But I asked myself, why would she lie about that? And why would you lie about getting shot in the foot? Like, dead ass. That's easily verifiable. She went to the hospital. The doctor said that, look, I pulled out bullet fragments out of her foot. So she got shot. The casings also matches Tory Lanez's gun. So the bullets came from there. It is Tory Lanez's gun. Why are you defending this guy? And that's my question, dog. Like, it's the Kyrie Irving and Kanye West thing all over again, except that same thing does not apply to black women. It just doesn't. Or women in general, but in this particular case, black women. We just don't believe women. We have been conditioned to think, hey, man, you can't trust these hoes. Who are hoes? Every woman. Besides your mom. And your grandma. Every woman that had you wasn't a hoe, but every woman outside of that, she's a hoe, apparently. And not to be trusted. Because, like, when you start putting this stuff together, I'm like, yo, all this stuff is easily verifiable. Why would Meg lie about this? Like, what does Meg have to gain by putting Tory Lanez in jail and lying about getting shot in the foot? What does she have? Like, what does she have to gain? Now, contrast to that, what does Tory Lanez have to lose? 22 years in prison? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd be fighting my ass off if I knew I was going to be in jail for 22 years. But this goes to my point, man. Look, we got to start protecting our own, right? And we got to start calling out our own. And that was my point when I called out Kyrie Irving and Kanye West. Like, look, when we do some stuff that's messed up, we got to call us out. Because it waters down our movement if we don't do it. And this was one of the things I feel like we got to call this out. And no matter what position you take on this, which I'm leaning towards, Tory Lanez shot this poor woman. That's what I'm leaning toward. Like, when you look at the evidence, that's what I'm getting to. Like, look, bro, you had in day five of the trial, you had a police officer testify that, look, the gun didn't misfire. Somebody had to intentionally shoot this gun. So we know somebody in that car shot Meg. Whether you want to say it's Tory Lanez or her best friend, somebody shot. And Tory Lanez needs to be held responsible, because if we're going to be like responsible black men and stewards of the community, we got to ask, like, yo, why didn't you handle that situation better, dog? Why aren't you leading in that position? Like, black men supposed to be leaders, supposed to be kings. Like, dog, you should de-escalate that situation. And somebody got a hold of your gun and shot it. And now you like, hubba, hubba, hubba. I don't know what happened. Mm-mm, dog. Not a realistic standard, dog. And anybody out here defending Tory Lanez and not making him any way culpable, check yourself, dog. I don't think you're pro-black. Don't think you're pro-black. But that's the Common Knowledge Podcast, updated weekly. Be sure to follow your boy on all the socials. Just look up DJ L Spade. Also, check out my new song, Lost Boys, available on all DSPs. And if you have any problem with what I said, man, feel free to send me a message on the Anchor app. I'd be more than happy to debate the topic with you. You guys stay up. Peace. Common Knowledge Podcast, just a man doing the best he can with what he got. And undoubtedly, technological and medical advances have made our lives more convenient. But at what price? And this is a real discussion we need to have. Because during the tech boom in the 90s, our rights and protections and privacy has not really caught up with the speed of technology and innovation. So to be honest, man, we've willingly given up a lot of our privacy and protections. And Tech companies do this on purpose. They give you this long user agreement shrouded in legalese that you don't really understand. And I'm guilty of this myself, of just clicking accept and you don't really know what you're accepting, right? And this is all done for them to protect themselves. But sometimes in that legal document, there's hidden gems that you really need to read and see what you're giving up. Like my homie Daniel Brandon made this point in his new podcast, Diverse Distractions, where like you hit the agreement for a lot of these things that you're buying. And if you read the agreement, it says you're not even really buying it. You're just licensing it. So at any point, the people can literally come in and just take your property, be like, hey man, we're not giving license for this no more. Like video games. You're not even buying the video games no more. You're just downloading the license to be able to play. To be honest, after 9/11, the American people ceded a lot of their privacy rights in the name of fighting terrorism. Like, we were scared. And I'm not even blaming Americans in the whole. We were scared. We were generally scared of the next 9/11 happening. So we made concessions. And in those concessions, we gave up a lot of our privacy. Then the homie Edward Snowden told us what was giving up and what the NSA was doing. And when that got brought to light, we started making small legislative pushes to try to protect some of our privacies. But to be honest with you, man, we need more. Like, we getting to the point that it's almost Minority Report out here. Dead ass. I mean, that's the reason why I've never done an Ancestry.com or a 23andMe. Because those DNA samples can be given. Well, not even given, sold to police departments. Don't believe me? Well, let's go to Ancestry.com. User agreement and disclaimers. We never share customer data with law enforcement unless we receive a legally valid request, such as a search warrant or written court order. Your DNA is up for grabs, man. Your DNA is up for grabs unless we start making legislation for privacy. Like, we have to do it dead ass with all these DNA sites and technological advances, man. Like, yo, we got to start putting some protections in. Like, no, you can't do it. And if you do overstep, there needs to be consequences and repercussions, which leads me to this story I read. San Francisco police sued after using rape exam kit to link woman to burglary. A sexual assault victim whose DNA was used to identify her as a burglary suspect sued a San Francisco Police Department on Monday, with a lawyer saying the genetic sample she provided to authorities had been weaponized against her. And yes, it was. Definitely was. The woman identified as Jane Doe in the suit filed in federal court in California's Northern District was re-victimized by what the suit described as unconstitutional practices used by the police department's crime lab. Sexual assault survivors consented to police to use their DNA for one purpose, to find perpetrators of sexual assault. What we have here is our constitutional rights turned on their head. After the woman was sexually assaulted 6 years ago, she provided her DNA to police investigators, according to the lawsuit. The sample was placed in what internal crime lab files obtained by the San Francisco Chronicle described as a quality assurance database. Wink, wink. A system created in 2015 to use in unrelated criminal cases and to eliminate contamination. Yes, a quality assurance file. They made a quality assurance file. Last December, a police lab criminologist ran DNA obtained from the scene of an apparent burglary through the database and found that it matched the woman's DNA, according to the suit. The criminologist, great name, provided a forensic report to a police sergeant who obtained an arrest warrant for the woman based largely on the DNA match, according to the lawsuit. It was a backup slush fund database just in case another crime come up and they don't have no leads. You go to this database, you're running through that. That's what it was being used for. I don't care what they say in quality assurance. No, what it was a backup database so they can keep somebody on file. So when they don't have no lead, they can go to this damn database and see can they have a beam. Which is evidence in the way this police department used this file. So the hell with innocent till proven guilty. I can prove you guilty by just putting in this database and bing, see, your DNA comes up. Super lazy policing. lazy policing. They ran it through a backup database. Oh, it's a burglary. Oh, we don't have no leads. We're running through the DNA database. Oh, what do you got? You got anything for me? Oh, show me what you got. Bam, got it. It's just dude did the quiet part out loud. He wasn't supposed to use this. He was supposed to use this DNA evidence to lead to something else more tangible to link him to the crime. He wasn't supposed to actually like say, hey, see the DNA, right? He wasn't supposed to use that. That's why this lawsuit is being filed, because dude fucked up. Whoever the sergeant was, they fucked up and did the quiet part out loud. The charges were later dropped, the lawsuit says, and in February, former San Francisco District Attorney Chisa Bowden, I think I'm saying that right, called the practice legally and ethically wrong and said it may violate the state's Victim Bill of Rights. You don't say. You don't say. A San Francisco police spokesman declined to comment on Monday's suit. Here we are. A woman goes in and consents to a rape kit 6 years ago. And then a criminologist takes some DNA, runs it through a quality assurance database, makes a match, and then they go arrest the lady. Real deal Minority Report type shit. Because here's the thing, right? DNA has been used to like free a lot of people who was like falsely accused of rapes and murders and stuff like that. But the flip is true too. When people hear DNA, they think, oh, science. And you know, science is never wrong. So now we can scientifically link criminals to crimes. But that ain't always the case. And let me explain why. So there's an American forensic chemist that who had participated in more than 3,000 criminal cases in her 21 years of working for the Oklahoma City Police Department. She testified in plenty of trials, got many convictions, got a lot of people locked up for sexual misconduct. Her name was Black Magic, Joyce Gilchrist. Turns out that a lot of the evidence she was using was bunk. Forensic science. Science! I'm quite sure y'all remember former Massachusetts crime lab chemist Andy Dukin, who was convicted for obstruction of justice for planting evidence. Science! Science worker! Chemist! A common trend in a lot of this is forensic workers are sloppy. Human error is a problem. And one of the reasons is this damn capitalism. Lab workers are overworked. They have to do too many functions. Another problem is nobody knows what the hell DNA is. Oh, we know what DNA is, but nobody knows how the science of matching DNA works. It's a big trust fall, man. If a law enforcement officer comes in and say, I have a DNA match, instantly everybody thinks to themselves, well, case closed because they got DNA. Ain't nobody asking how the DNA was extrapolated, what test was done. And if they told you what test and how it was extrapolated, most of y'all wouldn't understand, including my damn self. And let's be honest, American law enforcement is lazy. They're looking for the easiest way to close a case. And if that means going to a lab and having these folks say, oh, the DNA matches, bam, there it is. Super lazy policing. And that's not even getting to the gross mistrust here. The miscarriage of trust. The lady came in for a rape kit and y'all just kept the lady's rape sample? Like on ice? Like, what was the purpose of keeping the rape sample? If not just to violate constitutional rights and just have a Minority Report-like database. So if I come in for a rape, that means the police can keep my DNA data? Like, what else are you doing? If I'm a murder victim, are you keeping that DNA to link it to my other family? So like, say, seriously, think about it. God forbid somebody in my family gets shot, like my brother or my sister, right? And they do a DNA forensic exam. They take that DNA, keep it on ice, and then let's say I'm accused of doing a crime. And they find some of my DNA at the crime scene. Do you go back to that criminal file, criminal forensic file where my brother got shot, pull up that DNA to match to my DNA with no nuance? So they go into court and be like, yo, We found DNA evidence to link Marcus to the crime without saying how my DNA evidence got there. Maybe I spit at the crime scene or I took a piss in the corner. Who knows? No nuance. Only thing they have to say is they have a DNA match. And most of y'all going to be like, well, that's good enough for me. See what I'm saying? It gets super tricky. Lines need to be drawn in the sand. Has to be. The only problem is you might get somebody who's competent and doesn't say the quiet part out loud. And how do you combat that? I'm glad this lady's found a lawsuit. And I'm glad she's shining a light to this. And I'm telling you, everybody, man, protect your privacy the best way you can. I know it's hard with these technological advances and these user agreements that nobody reads and it's made so you don't read it. I know it's hard, man, but just be aware. Somebody out there wants your technological information and your biological information. And the question you got to ask yourself is, who wants this information and why? And if you want to help combat this problem, there is something you could do. There was a bill introduced by Senator Kristen Gillibrand, and the bill is S.2134. One more time, S.2134, Senate Bill 2134. And that is for DNA protection. Call your senator, email your senator, send smoke signals, write them a nasty letter. Let them know that you want them to support S.2134. Because right now, the bill has just only been introduced. They need to pass this bill. We need protections for our DNA. Get some of these privacy rights back. And if your senator doesn't support this, vote they stanky ass out. Let them know, look, man, if you don't support my privacy, then bye. That Senate Bill 2134. Call your senator, let him know.